Coming up on Tech News Today, Sony climbs into the cloud, Mozilla makes a phone OS, and the internet declares freedom! All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 2nd, 2012, Canada Day observed. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. Check out Pond5 at Pond5.com, and for 25% off this month, use code TWIT25. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Sarah Lane still on vacation for one more week, and we're recording at our new time of 10 a.m. Pacific. If you're watching us live, thanks for getting up and watching with us. We've got Callie Lewis joining us in just a minute. But first, we start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Sony Computer Entertainment has acquired cloud gaming service Gaikai for $380 million. Gaikai is similar to OnLive in that it streams the latest video games over the internet to almost any machine. Google demonstrated it on a Chrome OS Chromebox at Google I.O. last week. Sony intends to use Gaikai's data centers to bolster and expand Sony's online gaming service.
Mozilla's mobile operating system has a new name. Say goodbye to Boot to Gecko and say hello to Firefox OS.
Hello!
Mozilla's got some new partners for its OS, including Deutsche Telecom, Sprint, and ZTE. ZTE makes a lot of those phones that are carrier-branded like the Verizon Jetpack. The first phones with Firefox OS should hit Brazil in 2013.
Hey, remember when Facebook changed everybody's default email to Facebook.com last week and I said it was a bad idea? Well, guess what? It was a bad idea. CNET's Violet Blue reports on growing complaints from folks who use Facebook as their address book, having their email address overwritten in other people's address books. Also, email messages seem to have gone missing in some cases. The feature seems to be mobile as well. Blue points to one person using an iOS 6 preview that had their contacts changed there.
Everybody calm down. Our global trademark nightmare is over. The Apple iPad in China will be now called the Apple iPad. After Apple paid ProView $60 million in the settlement, ProView had been looking to collect as much as $400 million, so they're going to have to make do.
You might not have heard about this next piece of news because the entire internet was down all weekend. At least that's the way some people feel. A lightning storm on the East Coast took down an Amazon data center, leading to outages for a number of services that rely on Amazon. Then that was followed by a leap second being added to atomic clocks on June 30th, which caused even more outages by confused servers.
A lot of confusion going on. Mm. Deutsche Telekom was busy. First, they had that deal with Mozilla, and it also set up a deal with MasterCard that will bring the carrier an NFC wallet in the third quarter of this year. Poland and Germany will be the first regions to get the product, which will be SIM-based.
Welcome to the Microsoft Fanboy Cafe. Now, we have prepared Microsoft three ways for you today. We'll start with a 54% browser share for Internet Explorer, according to Net Applications, and a third-place finish for Chrome that cleanses the palate of that continuous percentage decline aftertaste. We'll move you on to a lovely combo of Net Applications showing Windows 7 on 41.6% of PCs, paired with XP on 43.6% for a 92% Windows domination. And we'll finish you off with the dazzling numbers from StatCounter that show Windows 7 had 50.2% of the OS market for June, while XP had 29.9%. Enjoy.
I like my Microsoft al dente. Last Friday, Apple won a preliminary injunction against Samsung that could ban the import of the Galaxy Nexus phone. On Saturday, Samsung filed a motion to stay the injunction. For Apple to enforce this injunction, the company would have to pony up over $95 million as a bond.
Micron Technology has agreed to acquire Japanese chipmaker Elpida Memory for about $750 million in cash. That'll boost Micron's manufacturing capacity and help them take on Samsung, the global leader for DRAM memory chips. The agreement involves a sponsorship, which requires Micron to spend about $2.5 billion to acquire Elpida's equity and pay off some of its big debt.
Twitter's API changes are ruffling the feathers of developers. Twitter announced it will enforce stricter rules. Stricter rules in a blog post entitled, quote, delivering a consistent Twitter experience. So developers are thinking, okay, things are going to get shut down. Oh, yeah. Twitter also killed its cross-posting deal with LinkedIn over the weekend.
Big thanks to our sponsor for today's episode of Tech News Today, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. If you want reliability, you want 24/7 support, you want customizable templates that you don't have to customize to make them look good, but you can if you want to, Squarespace.com is the place to go. And they're still giving you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. For example, this means 10% off the first month on monthly plans, 10% off the first year on annual plans. And that free domain registration completely integrated within the sign-up process. So you get a domain name when you sign up. That's about a $15 retail value, and it's yours to keep. It's not like something you lose. You own that domain name. Squarespace.com is easy to use, includes lots of blogger modules, easy to import your current blog. And the best part is you don't have to pay a dime. You don't even have to give them a credit card number if you want to try it out. Just go there right now, Squarespace.com. Put in the name of a site. Use maybe one of their modules to import your current blog if you've got it, just to see what it looks like. And if you like it, remember to use the offer code TNT7 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about free domain registration with the annual plan subscription, too. That's Squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT7. Show your support for Tech News Today and get a good blog to boot. We thank Squarespace for their support of the show. All right, let's dig deeper. Joining us today, Callie Lewis, host of Geek Beat TV. Thanks for joining us on our first morning recording, Callie.
My pleasure. I'm in the central time zone, so I'm up and ready to go.
You're right. It's lunchtime. Thank you for joining us at lunchtime in the central time zone. Appreciate that.
My lunch is here. I'll be back.
Okay, we'll wait. Can you just send some of that over? We're kind of hungry.
Do you have enough to share?
Let's start. Actually, let's share some news about Mozilla and that phone OS we mentioned.
Yeah, sure. Now, Mozilla announced a change to its operating system known as Boot to Gecko, which is not a very good name for marketing. So they switched it to Firefox OS, and they have a bunch of partnerships. And the old news was that the phones would come out in 2012, but that's been pushed to 2013. So the thing is, though, with Firefox OS being all HTML5 based, can the smartphone market sustain another operating system, Callie? Do you think there's enough room for Android and iOS and Windows Phone, BlackBerry 10, Mozilla, Tizen?
Did you say Tizen?
I missed that one. Can this be a winner?
You know, I mean, the great thing about how we live and the internet and America and everything is that that's a possibility. But realistically speaking, no, I don't think so. I mean, it looks great. It's very simple. It's very clean. I think they did a fantastic job with it. But they're going to really have to put a ton of money and marketing efforts. I mean, they're going to have to come up with a really cool ad. You know, there's like so much that they're going to have to do to even have a chance in the market. My vote isn't on their side, unfortunately. I'd hate to say that.
Well, the carriers can pitch in with the advertising, and if it's good enough, then people will start telling each other about it, and it'll get some social media. Firefox has a big community. The question is, can they succeed there where Symbian and others haven't? You know, the fact that other people have tried exactly the same thing, which is we've got an open source OS, we're going to partner with carriers, we're going to get them to put it on the phones, and hopefully they market the phones, hasn't panned out in the past.
Right. You know, I mean, you talk about the community, it's less, I get the impression, and I think I've seen some numbers, that it's shrinking, right? And now that Internet Explorer and other built-in browsers are actually better than they used to be, people don't really have to go out and search for other browsers. If they don't want to, they can use the built-in browsers. So I don't know that it's that they're going to succeed where, you know, where others haven't. I just don't see it happening. But what do you guys think?
I can see Mozilla actually having a shot because of how many legal issues go on with Android right now that a lot of the manufacturers have to pay a tithe over to Microsoft because they have patents related to that. If there was something free and clear that's backed by a company as large as Mozilla, on top of that, when Apple tried the idea of we're going to have web-based apps, like the first iOS version, there was no app store. It was everything was on the web. Mobile internet wasn't exactly like it is now. To say you have a Twitter app now and to say it's a Chrome-less browser and you're just seeing the mobile Twitter and the mobile version of Facebook, it seems like the mobile internet is mature enough that maybe it has a shot. It's that can Mozilla get the other hardware partners on board? And that's a very hard sell.
And let's point
Which
out...
Which hardware partners do they have?
ZTE and I believe TCL. So it's more these... You don't know the names, but you've used
this
the
is what's really smart, is Telefonica... In Brazil, is their first partner, and it's not clear whether ZTE or TCL is going to make the first model, but they are targeting the developing markets, and that is what everyone is waiting to crack. Everyone thinks that that's the place to go because Symbian is in decline in those markets, and Android and iOS are seen as a little bit too expensive. So there's lots of Android phones that are in that features phone smartphone gap. There's lots of folks trying to target that. Windows Phone with their
Tango
operating system is trying to target that. Nokia thinks they can crack that market. That is the place for Mozilla to target because that is where it's wide open. Nobody's got that market locked up, and an open source operating system probably has a better advantage here. It'd be interesting to see how this goes with Telefonica. Then it's coming to Sprint in the U.S. So it's, again, going to compete on that budget phone area, which again,
well, that makes sense, actually, for what it is. I don't think we're ever going to, and that's the thing. If they're going to compete on the budget side of things, then great. And they can actually do well with that. But we're not going to walk around being like, oh, yeah, I have the Firefox OS.
Well, the other thing is when these apps work on every other HTML5 browser, so like if you have an Android device or you have an iOS device,
theoretically. But have you ever tried to use HTML5 apps from one browser to another?
Yeah, it's a little clunky.
Yeah.
But then again, I could get Mozilla Firefox on Android, so why would I?
Well, and that my Firefox might not mind that. And they're basically saying, look, if you like this experience, then you can try it out on the phone you currently have.
I mean, the argument is if you could write once and it plays everywhere, that would be great. And the thing is HTML5, like you were saying, Tom, doesn't necessarily work on every browser the same. So if I don't know, if standards were standardized, I guess, if this works across
well,
the board,
it'd be... No, the standard is standardized. It's just the question is the implementation sometimes is different because HTML5 actually hasn't been ratified yet. And it's all about how the browser interprets it, how the operating system interprets it. So there's always going to be those kinds of issues. The promise is that eventually everything works across platform. But I think this is a very interesting operating system to keep an eye on, especially for that lower-end bargain phone market that gives you a lot of functionality for a low price.
Keep in mind, when it does come to Sprint and everything, there will be a lot of, I think, education that will need to happen on that end in order for people to understand from the salesperson's perspective.
From the salesperson's perspective, that is a good point because that's what has been killing Windows is salespeople really just not pushing that phone. That's what Mozilla needs help with for sure. Let's move on to Sony buying Gaikai. So the PS4 will just be streaming cloud games.
Maybe. There's a chance that the PS3 probably could get that kind of functionality.
Right.
Gaikai, if you guys didn't know, it was a US-based company. It is a US-based company, even though the name is, I believe it's Japanese for Open Ocean or something like that. Games right now, if you haven't tried it, were playable in the browser. You can embed games on Facebook. There's all kinds of, these are real, you know, powerful games. When I'm talking about Tiny Tower, or we're not talking Farmville, we're talking serious games here. And they already had deals in place with LG, Samsung, and Wikipad. So the Wikipad is supposed to be the first tablet built for gaming or something. But the thing is, now that Sony's bought them for $380 million, is this going to become like a Sony exclusive thing, or would Sony try to keep these partnerships in place with Samsung and LG, assuming those companies want to do business with them?
It'd be smart for them to, but I highly doubt it. I mean, don't you think they'll close it off?
I get the impression that what Sony wants here is the back end. They're looking at all those data centers and all those servers, and they're looking at the problems they've had with the Sony network in the past, and they're saying, we want to take advantage of that. I don't see them saying a lot about Gaikai as a service itself. It seems like, for now anyway, they're happy to just let it keep doing what it's been doing, and we'll likely see them roll it in as a feature on the PS3. It would be kind of silly for them to buy the company and not do it. But it definitely feels like Sony wants the technology. They want the big iron that Gaikai has figured out how to do, and they want to create a new service and a new ability to roll out games over the cloud.
And one of the things-
it's something they absolutely had to have done, you know, with OnLive coming, and their security issues have been obviously huge. I think they had to do this. There was really not a lot of choice.
Yeah, one of the things about Sony with this particular deal, I've been thinking about this. Like, these deals with Samsung and LG that are pre-existing, I mean, in the old days, I think Sony would close it off, keep it to themselves. But considering how friendly television manufacturers have gotten lately, like Sony and Panasonic worked together, Samsung and Sony worked together on LCD displays, it's this kind of thing where I'm thinking Sony could provide the back end and go, look, your LG TV's got a great service. It always has PlayStation games. The other thing is it brings TV costs down for Sony as well. Because they were working on putting PlayStations in televisions. They had that particular television that had like a dual 3D display. I forget what they called it. But with Cause Arai there, I could see simply going, every Sony device you have can be a PlayStation. Because that was his big thing. PlayStation was a big successful product for Sony. If every television doesn't need to have a hefty processor and a ton of RAM, and you're streaming these games, like Sony's got something for the future, I think. Now the question is,
would be very interesting.
What happens to OnLive? Do they become a target for Microsoft? Or does Microsoft come out with their own thing? Or is this something that Microsoft doesn't need to worry about just yet?
Oh, of course they have to worry about it. I mean, if this is where Sony is going, yeah, they have to worry about it. And they should probably have looked at OnLive already. I mean, anyone could pick up OnLive, and I do quite well, I think.
I'm not sure that Microsoft needs OnLive. Microsoft has a good cloud strategy. It's not exactly the same strategy, but they could develop their own OnLive pretty fast. I don't think Sony could. And the key difference between Gaikai and OnLive is OnLive is application-based, whereas Gaikai runs in a browser. Now, the OnLive can run in a browser, but it's a different implementation. Gaikai is easily run in a browser. That's why I don't think Sony is gonna shut them down, because I think it's a better idea to say, like, we can turn anything into a PlayStation. And the PlayStation is the premier box if you want the best experience. But, you know, we'll give you a little bit for free in your browser on your Chrome box. Okay, nobody's going to have a Chrome box. But, you know, in your browser.
Yeah, that's a Chrome box.
You don't think that's the next big thing?
The Chrome box? I don't want to get the Chrome box people hating on me. But, no, I don't think it's going to be as widespread. But, obviously, if you can just go, you know, fire up your browser on your laptop, your desktop, play some PS3 games, and get the bug, you might be more willing to buy a PlayStation.
You said Microsoft could develop their own very easily, which is true, yes. But don't you think they would benefit from having something like the name of OnLive?
Yeah, it's a good point, right? I mean, they can then take something that's got a little buzz and fold it in. But Microsoft gets as much backlash when they do that. I mean, think about all the people complaining about Skype because they bought Skype. Like, oh, Skype sucks now. It's like Skype's no different than it was before they bought it. Everybody just attributes anything that goes wrong with Skype to being Microsoft's fault. Yeah, so it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, Nintendo should be doing something, whatever. Because we're talking about the two major ones. Like, Nintendo's like, we have another display. Maybe they want to get in the cloud because their hardware is just weak. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's not a pun. It's not. It's weak. It's just very weak. The thing is, I'm
W-I-I-K.
I'm just very curious about what this is going to do for the console refreshes. We're not going to see a bunch of that. Once everything's on the cloud, once you have one box, it'll get upgraded on the back end. You don't need to have, you know, a monstrous console with spinning discs and fans, and, you know, the amount of hardware requirements go down like just insane. So, I mean, I could think that the PS4 will be like the last PlayStation we'll see. Because why would they ever need to refresh it after that?
Well, the cloud is important for all of these sorts of systems, which means it has to stay up. Mm-hmm. And we saw an example of it not staying up. Did you guys get affected directly by this? Were you trying to post Instagram pictures or stream Netflix?
For the first time the entire week, my wife and I sat down. I think it was Friday night. We were like, let's just relax and watch an episode of something on Netflix. And it was like the only time all week we did it. And of course it was down.
What about you, Kelly?
No, I had no clue whatsoever until I saw the news reports.
I sort of deftly avoided it. Like, I posted an Instagram picture apparently right before it went down, and I didn't post another one until it had gone back up. I didn't try to watch any Netflix movies or anything.
The only thing I got hit by was Pinterest, and I don't ever go to Pinterest.
You're such a huge Pinterest fan. Don't be ashamed.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I'm on Pinterest all the time. I received a link from a friend, and I'm like, I can't see Pinterest. I thought this thing was up all the time. I didn't realize it was that. I know it's very popular, but I didn't think it got hit. But for the most part, I missed out on the rest of it, I don't know what I was doing this weekend that I didn't watch Netflix.
Well, if you're wondering exactly what happened, here's a brief indication. There were hurricane-like storms in Ashburn, Virginia. That knocked an Amazon data center offline Thursday night. Second time in a month that data center has gone offline. Now, the last time it went offline, it did not cause massive outages, but elastic load balancing failed, which is supposed to spread the traffic from that data center to different data centers. In particular, traffic from Netflix failed to get spread to other data centers. The back-end services for Netflix, by the way, if you were watching a Netflix video when this happened, you would have continued to get the video. Because it wasn't the video streaming that got knocked off. It was all the other aspects that got knocked off. The choosing and the searching and all of that sort of thing.
Logging in.
Once that happened, that cascaded through the data center, knocked out Pinterest, knocked out Heroku, Instagram, a bunch of other high-profile casualties. They started to get that taken care of, and then the leap second leaped into view. At the end of the day, June 30th, of course, you know, June 30th in different parts of the world, it caused the atomic clocks to add 1 second. So we actually went from 23:59, which is, you know, in 24-hour time, right before midnight, to 23:60 to 00000. And a lot of servers were not prepared for this and got confused and went down. So Reddit, Gawker, Mozilla, Qantas Airlines all had issues with this. Gawker said only rebooting their servers cleared up the issue. Why do we have a leap second? Well, atomic clocks are based on the rotation or on the orbit of the Earth around the sun. And it doesn't match up with the number of times the Earth spins around in that period. So every so often we have to add a second just to keep it up to date. The Earth slows, rotation is slowing down, but that's not really the cause of the need for the leap second. Atomic clocks are synced with servers. They provide that time to the servers. And so if the servers are expecting to see 000 and they get this thing that they're told is actually illegal, which is a 60 in the second slot instead of a 59 or a zero, they freak out. Google had a really interesting fix to this. They called it the smear. So they kept adding milliseconds throughout the day on the day of the leap second so that the servers were drifting. And by the time the atomic clock told them it was 00, they had jumped ahead enough that they were not confused.
Weren't we talking about in Randomizer a while ago, some like lightning bolt machine that you could create lightning? And then so Google introduces their own cloud services stuff. That Amazon goes down and there's lightning happening. Any conspiracies? Do we want to go crazy and say Google set up a lightning storm to knock out Amazon to do their own cloud service promotion?
And they've been slowing down the rotation of the Earth?
Sure.
With very heavy servers. Since 1972.
That's right.
Wait, I want to know, because 1972, I guess, is the first time that we started doing leap seconds.
Uh-huh.
But what did they do before then? And why did I was confused about that whole scenario.
Well, you know, cloud service servers thing wasn't a big issue in 1972 because you had a handful of mainframes. You can count them on one hand. So I think everything just got adjusted by hand. Every once in a while, they just said, this stuff's out of whack. You know, I don't think we had the atomic clocks, certainly not as pervasive as they are right now, definitely not as accurate. So, you know, it's sort of living in the primitive times with the little, what's the thing that you turn over and the sands run through?
Hourglass?
Yeah, it was all done by hourglass. That's my guess.
But the crazy thing is all the stuff went down and the world kept going. Everything went fine.
What?
I know.
No.
You believe that? It's like all
not,
that.
Not if you read the headlines.
I know.
The world stopped. Well,
if you read it online, that means everything was fine. That's the
point. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I honestly, I like read it. I kept reading the stories about it, but I never ran into it. I never actually experienced it directly.
I did not experience the end of the world.
I really feel like I want to experience, you know?
You're jealous.
This is like, yes, exactly. I'm jealous.
Take a hammer to your modem. It's about the same.
Oh, okay.
You don't get the community aspect there. You got to get a bunch of other people to hammer their modems at the same time. So then you can run around screaming together. We got a few more stories to discuss, but let's thank Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. Now, many of you in our audience make your own media, make your own podcast, your own films, even just web designers. And if you are an app designer, you probably need these creative assets, and it's dangerous to just go out and do a search and grab them. You probably don't have the rights for most of the stuff you're grabbing if you do that. That's why the best way to bring your production to the next level is access to a high-quality creative resource like Pond5. They give you the world's largest selection of royalty-free stock video, photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, motion graphic templates if you're doing editing and creating titles. Lots of creative assets, all of which can be downloaded instantly for legal use in virtually any media production. You can get establishing shots, helicopter shots, shots of multicolored koi swimming around in a pond, anything you can think of. That's St. Louis that we're looking at on the video podcast right now. I feel at home. I don't know why the fountains are running red with blood,
but I'm scared.
It probably could fit into your movie if that's what you want. So if you're the kind of person that takes videos and makes vector illustrations and makes motion graphics, you can actually make some money on Pond5 too. They allow you to upload pro-quality content, set your own prices, and receive industry-leading royalties on every sale. Go check them out, pond5.com. It's P-O-N-D and then the number 5. And this month, use that coupon code TWIT25 to get 25% off your purchase. That's pond5.com. Use code TWIT25, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's dig into Facebook's email mess. I alluded to this in the news fuse.
Yes.
So the chickens have come home to roost.
Sort of. And I guess they get lost. Facebook last week changed what email account was visible on your info page to the @facebook.com email address that hardly people use. So the idea would be that you'd get your emails at Facebook, and it would be a public thing to show instead of showing your regular email address. It was something you could change. We talked about that last week, and apparently people didn't change it because over the weekend people freaked out. They're saying messages are gone with that iOS application, iOS 6, that is the operating system. If it's linked to Facebook, so when the contact information changed on Facebook, it changed in your address book, people complaining, saying, now I have a useless email address because this doesn't go anywhere. Facebook is blaming this on user confusion because they, if you receive a message from a friend, you'll see it in the messages. If you don't receive an email message from a friend, like a stranger, it shows up in the other section. Now, a lot of people, including myself, forgot about the other section. So they thought, oh, I'm losing messages entirely. They're probably just hidden there. So, Callie, do you think Facebook should switch it back? Or do you think that people should shut up?
Oh, gosh, Facebook. You said
I think it's a lot of people's reaction right there.
They're blaming it on user confusion. Unfortunately, that's a constant with changes that go on at Facebook. So should they change it back? I mean, they're not. They're just going to do whatever they're going to do. People are going to figure it out. And even if it stays the same, they'll figure it out. They'll go on life as normal until the next change comes along and everybody gets upset once again. I mean, it's just this rotating circle that happens, like, what, weekly?
Well, it seems like it. Facebook is always doing this and getting in trouble.
Sorry,
and then saying
that's
they won't,
my soapbox.
Yeah, they're saying they won't do it again. And I'm wondering when they're going to learn. I know Prager on Twitter said that this was all planned, but I still don't get that. My worry was Facebook wants people to use Facebook as a contact book. That is one of the things that they would like to addict you to Facebook with. Doing this makes me never want to do that. I don't use Facebook that way, but I absolutely wouldn't because they're going to change your information. That's not reassuring. I don't want to use a contact book that's going to say, hey, we decided to change your email address, and not just in your own contact book, but in everybody else's contact book as well. So now they're sending you important emails that are going to get lost because you never checked that inbox, or in some cases, apparently they just evaporated. They didn't show up in Facebook at all anyway. That's my soapbox.
This seems like Facebook forced education kind of stuff. Like, we moved stuff, we changed things, and this is the way you're gonna do it anyway. There's really very little people can do other than complain and say, "Hey, Facebook, you did something wrong." And like Callie was saying, they're used to hearing this every week. It's you did this, you changed that, we don't like it. And they're like, "Well, listen, if you really have an issue with it, you can always leave.
You can always use MySpace.
You can always use MySpace, Google Plus. Google Plus isn't tied to your email at all, right? It completely is. So, I mean, the idea that they get more data, I could see why Facebook did this. And I still think that putting up almost my spam account, an @facebook.com address. It's like, instead of giving out my public email address, it's like, okay, fine, I'll use this as an extra. But I think somebody else mentioned this as an email the other week. My friends have my real email address. They can contact me via that. It's this idea that it's tied to other applications, that if they're using Facebook as their data source, that's the weird part of
it. Auto-completes your email address. Wrong.
That's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
So will we see, like, when we log in to other services using Facebook, it'll be tied to that at facebook.com email address?
Is that what you're saying? That is a possibility, yeah. When you use Facebook Connect, if you allow that service to access your contact information, it might use that as the address to send you your notifications at, which again...
Right.
Yeah.
So then when we lose our password, but if that service needs to send any information, it's actually going to go through the Facebook email, which will wind up on facebook.com, which I rarely check. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why we need to declare internet freedom. And that has happened today.
Oh, good.
Post-SOPA, a group of advocates worked out something called the Declaration of Internet Freedom. It was published today with a limited number of companies and individuals signing on to begin with. These are people that have been working on the document, and they're now putting it out to the internet saying, let's discuss it. Let's get things going. It was led by Free Press Internet Campaign Director Josh Levy, Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, and a handful of other leaders, including Elizabeth Stark, Yohai Bengler, and others. And they worked because they don't all agree on everything. They're not all saying net neutrality needs to happen. They're not all saying exactly the same policies need to be implemented. They wanted to agree on basic principles and work out the policy implementations later. Now, that may sound like a little bit of a cop-out, but the idea is to say, look, these are five things that everybody can agree on. Now let's have a discussion based on that, rather than flailing around like what was happening with the SOPA discussions and having no basis for having a discussion at all. Over 60 organizations and other leaders have signed their names to the document, and it's getting more all the time. The goal is not to get new laws passed, but to mobilize people and engage policymakers on these issues. So let me read out the issues themselves for you guys. It's really short. And Callie and Ayaz, I'm curious what you guys think. We stand for a free and open internet. We support transparent and participatory processes for making internet policy and the establishment of five basic principles. Expression, don't censor the internet. Access, promote universal access to fast and affordable networks. Openness, keep the internet an open network where everyone is free to connect, communicate, write, read, watch, speak, listen, learn, create, and innovate. Innovation. Protect the freedom to innovate and create without permission. Don't block new technologies and don't punish innovators for their users' actions. And privacy. Protect privacy and defend everyone's ability to control how their data and devices are used. Callie, what do you think of that?
It sounds good. I have not had a chance to dig into it. My understanding, and you broke out on a lot of the intro stuff, so maybe I missed it. But my understanding is that they are presenting this to government officials, correct?
They're presenting it to everybody. They're saying, okay, look, government officials, lobbyists, general internet people, let's use this as the basis to have our discussions.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a good start. You know, we've already started, but I mean, I think it's a good position to have to be able to always kind of look back at it, kind of like we have the Constitution, right? We always look back on it. Is this what we're trying? Is what we're doing right now going back to those basic principles? So I think it could be very good. Before I absolutely say one way or another, I need to look more into it. And I apologize. I've been quite busy. I just got back from the CEA line shows. So I haven't seen as much as I wish I had.
Well, you know, what's nice, though, about this is it's a very compact document. It's not going to take you a long time to parse it out and look at it and say, you know, do I agree with these basic principles? And that was the idea, was not to say net neutrality needs to happen, or not to say we need DRM and we need stronger copyright rules. Well, what it was trying to say is these are the principles that we should protect. Don't censor things. Keep the internet open. Don't punish people for innovating. Protect people's privacy.
Yeah.
The declaration definitely seems admirable. I mean, I'm looking at it, and it'd be nice if this stuff could happen. But, I mean, it seems like I'm just butting up against the idea of the real world. Is it, you know, are companies going to sign up to support this? Like, I mean, major companies like, you know, Google or Microsoft or anybody who puts together anything on the web. if they back this kind of thing and they have their names on this, that's the kind of pull that's necessary. I mean, we've had enough outcry with SOPA and PIPA and everything that basically people rallied around something. And this declaration kind of has this idea of, hey, look, you can stay vigilant on this. We don't always need to be reactionary when it comes to, oh, some horrible law is coming down the pike. We want to make sure that we always know what we really want out of this. So instead of having a knee-jerk reaction to legislation that might be good intentions but doesn't have good execution, this is the kind of stuff you need to have written out. But again, it's about who's going to back it, because having some of the familiar Amnesty International behind this or EFF, like, yeah, of course they are. But when a company that is large and is willing to put their names on this and say, look, yeah, you know this idea of don't censor the internet, that's effectively saying – we have an issue with you, China. And that's immediately, when you're a global company, it's not something you want to put your name on.
Well, right from the preamble, it says, let's discuss these principles, agree or disagree with them, debate them, translate them, make them your own, broaden the discussion with your community as only the internet can make possible. So they're not even putting this out here as like, this is the you know, spoken word that must never be changed. This is not written in stone. But I like the fact that they kept the Googles and the Microsofts and those folks out of it at the beginning and said, let's focus on the principles that diverse people can agree with without bringing in the baggage of a company like that. Not because we don't think that they're valuable, but because that changes the platform of debate. Let's come up with something that's cross-platform, essentially, no matter what your ideology, that we think everyone from the MPAA to the EFF can agree on. And I think they've done a really good job here. I can't see much that I even raise an eyebrow at.
Yeah.
The privacy thing, I think I have my own issues about privacy and how we kind of define privacy in a 20th century way when we're headed for a 22nd century world where privacy is going to mean something entirely different. But they kept the language very, very limited. They said protect privacy and defend your ability to control how your data and devices are used. And I can't find any fault with that.
I can see the innovation aspect having some issues. Protect the freedom to innovate and create without permission. That's when you're going to get companies, rights holders like the MPAA, RIAA going, what do you mean without permission? You need our permission. And that's the kind of opposition you're going to see.
And that's where the debate happens. Yeah,
have the debate.
All right, let's finish up with a small battle in the fight over freedom of expression. The oatmeal. And Matt Inman, if you haven't been following the story, really quickly, he was complaining that some of his cartoons had been stolen by Funny Junk, and he'd asked them to be removed, and they weren't removed. And so he ranted about them a little bit, and they sent him a cease and desist and asked him to pay $20,000 fine for defamation. He responded by saying, I will raise $20,000 for charity. I will take a picture of it and send it to you along with this picture of your mom seducing a bear, your mom towards Funny Junk, by the way. It's a company. It doesn't have a mom. And then I will split the money up between the National Wildlife Federation and the American Cancer Society. Whatever you think of what he did there, what Charles Carrion, the lawyer for Funny Junk, did next is kind of insane. He sued Inman directly. Carrion sued Inman, not Funny Junk. And so Carrion finally added another round over the weekend, trying to stop the money raised by Indiegogo from going to the charities. He claimed that Inman was operating as a false charity and that if Inman personally donated the money to the National Wildlife Federation and the American Cancer Society, he would be depriving people of tax write-offs. The 14,000-plus donors who contributed to the charitable fund would no longer be able to claim those as tax donations, and Inman would get them as donations. Well, Inman teamed up with the EFF Sunday night, launched a salvo of their own on many fronts. Among them, Inman said that he has used his own money to take a picture of the cash. That way he doesn't ever have to touch it. And he's still going to send the picture and the drawing to Funny Junk. At Inman's request, Indiegogo has sent all the funds raised through credit cards directly to the National Wildlife Federation and the American Cancer Society. That happened on June 29th, on Friday. So that money's already been donated. Carrion can't stop it. The rest of the money is in PayPal, and Inman has written checks on that PayPal account to the charities directly and has given those checks to his lawyers for disbursement. Now, the lawyers are holding onto the checks, waiting for the judge's decision on the restraining order. But, Callie, have you been following this craziness here?
I haven't really been following that particular story, but I mean, like, when did donating to charity become such a big ordeal or such a big hassle?
Well, it's this lawyer, Carrion, took personal offense to what Inman did. And he was looking for anything, and he even said this publicly, he was looking for any reason to sue this guy, and he keeps finding new things to sue him over, and he's basically carrying on his he has a vendetta. He has an issue with this guy, with Inman, and he's just trying every argument. I mean, he's really doing a huge disservice to every person who gets licensed as a lawyer. Like, you're doing us not a favor. So
needs to settle it over dinner or drinks or something.
Beer summit.
Done with it.
Get a beer summit going, because you guys are really...
I don't know. At this point, Carrion is... Bear summit. That's funny. I think Carrion is so angry that he probably can't rationally discuss this with Inman. So he really just needs to stop. Just drop it. Let it go. Because this is all emotional. And in fact, the EFF and Inman's lawyers wrote that. This seems to be just an emotional outburst, and it doesn't seem to have any basis in law. And they went point by point, and from what I can tell, pretty much destroyed all of the cases that Carrion has been trying to make. So
I think we all need to learn that when you're emotional, you don't do stuff.
You don't file lawsuits.
Sit back.
Yes.
You don't go ranting online. You don't file lawsuits. Just calm down.
That's good advice. And with that, we move on to the randomizer. Everyone calm down. Don't worry about batteries. You're going to be able to spray them on anything soon. This story's been kicking around for a few days, but still getting written up. Wired has a good explanation of it today. A team of mechanical engineers have published a paper demonstrating spray-on rechargeable batteries that could be combined with solar cells to create self-sufficient energy conversion storage devices. So instead of trying to find room for the battery on a device, you could have rechargeable batteries and even solar-charged batteries that you spray on the outside of a device. Paper was published in the Nature Scientific Report explaining that breaking down the different components of the battery, that's your electrodes, the separation between the electrodes, the electrolyte solution that carries the current collectors, rendering them into liquid form could revolutionize the way we power our devices. Rather than being tied to fixed shapes and sizes, batteries could just take on any form you want. Spray them in there. Hold on. I need to power up.
Just a lot of spraying of batteries. I mean, the concept sounds interesting. I could see just people putting this in a printer. Like, just start printing all kinds of batteries.
Print out batteries, absolutely.
Like inkjets. That would be a nice usage for that. And I'm sure the prices for the cartridge would be just as expensive.
Right. Can you imagine if you could just print out a battery when you needed an extra one?
Just have a whole bunch ready.
On a rate, not even needing a 3D printer.
That would be awesome. I'm just kind of curious. Cool. Like, what's the connector like? How do you connect to this spray-on battery? Is it just when you spray it on, is it immediately conductive?
I don't see how. I mean, it can't just automatically be conductive and charge your device.
We're going to need alligator clips, I guess.
Something.
Please put your alligator clips on the paper.
Right.
I want to see.
It's completely awesome. We're ways, ways, ways away from it actually being a reality in terms of our daily lives, but this is cool.
Further research is needed to develop electrodes less sensitive to moisture and oxygen, as well as paints that could completely protect the spray-painted batteries from the elements. But you're right, bringing us back to reality here. But it is a pretty cool idea.
The idea of protecting against the weather would mean that you could spray paint your house with this stuff, and your house becomes a battery. Like, you could store up. That's the idea. Because if you can make it weatherproof, you can have giant things become batteries, and like, who knows what kind of films you could put on this. It'd be nice.
We miss Sarah Lane. She'll be back in a week. But in the meantime, one of us will do the calendar. It's my turn today. Ooh. A Jelly Bean factory image for Nexus 7 was released today. Lets you go back to stock on your phone. So if you're looking for that image, it's available on the Android developer site. CERN is announcing new results from the Large Hadron Collider on Wednesday, July 4th. Everybody assumes it's going to be evidence of the Higgs boson. Get ready to pop the champagne corks if you're a physicist or you're into subatomic particles, because it's going to be a huge day for physics. Verizon Droid Incredible 4G LTE drops July 5th. Not as huge of a day for physics, but very big if you like the Droid Incredible 4G LTE, because it's finally coming. And Marvel's The Avengers Blu-ray hits September 25th. iOS second screen app is coming this month, so you can get all
pumped up and use a bunch of Avengers stuff on your iPad and then get ready to buy the Blu-ray September 25th. There'll be two versions, one with a digital copy and one without. The prices are a little different depending on that. Let's check what's incoming.
This is not in the agenda, but does anyone have a problem with the digital copies that come in? They drive me nuts. Actually ever work.
The ultraviolet. The ultraviolet ones I have found to be not so good. The iTunes ones I have found okay. But it's the fact that you have to go, is this in my ultraviolet collection or is this on iTunes or is it on this thing?
Yeah,
or
it's
that
ridiculous.
Thing? It's a little annoying.
Okay, sorry. Rant over.
No, that's okay. I've only had the iTunes ones because it's been so long since I actually bought a DVD or Blu-ray. I think Doctor Who's Blu-ray collection for the last season was the last one I bought. And I haven't had any problems with the iTunes digital copies, but that's a test of like one or two, so it's not a very scientific sample. I got an email from Andrew Birch, who said he would like to make a small correction on Thursday's episode. I was making an assertion that Microsoft's telemetry collected from the Microsoft Customer Experience Improvement Program was not scientific, because I was suggesting there might have been a selection bias. This is the one that they cited for why they got rid of the start menu. He says that the program was something you did not have to be invited to. The CEIP is actually enabled by default on Windows machines. He said he double-checked this. It's really a broad, non-biased scientific method of collecting telemetry data regarding the declining use of the start button. Ryan from Everett, Washington, cited the exact same thing in the opposite case. He says the program you mentioned in the You Killed the Start Menu story is a self-selecting group. This is data collected as a result of the ubiquitous send anonymous data to Microsoft checkbox. Power users who distrust Microsoft will uncheck that box while normal users leave it on. If power users feel underrepresented in this data, they have nobody but themselves to blame for unchecking the box. If you want your voice to be heard, leave the checkbox on. Put another way, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. So they're both angry about the CEIP, but my point stands, Andrew and Ryan, which is this is not a representative sample necessarily, because people who don't want to be tracked are left out, and so you've got a selection bias of a sort. I was wrong about what the selection bias was, but thanks for pointing that out, both of you guys.
So Microsoft was pointing to telemetry instead of just saying, look, we just wanted to kill it. They want to have a backup reason.
They've been trying to kill that start menu for a long time. Well, they got rid of the word.
Yeah, they went to the Windows button, and that's a different thing. We have an email from Jim, the space engineer. It's quite a long email, so we'll have the full thing in our show notes. He talks about the GPS spoofing at the University of Texas at Austin. He's saying that he's no stranger to GPS navigation, and it's rarely used as a sole source of navigation on anything above personal hobbyist equipment. He discussed the Kalman filter algorithm, which incorporates multiple sensors, including GPS. He's talking about how spoofing is just one of the problems of GPS signals. Signals reflecting off of buildings, water, or even wing surfaces can garble and confuse the signal. He says he's not surprised that a university was able to spoof their own GPS-only budget drone. A better question is if the drone would have passed FAA requirements for use over cities.
Interesting. Okay, that's good stuff. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you writing in and sharing your expertise with us. And that's it for our first morning recorded edition of Tech News Today. Thanks for everybody who's in the chat room. We got a good crew in there. And thank you, Callie Lewis, for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time and chatting with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Don't forget geekbeat.tv, the place to watch Callie's show. Anything cool, new, and interesting to tell folks about right now?
Well, 4th of July episode coming out this week. I was just at the CEA line shows. We were the official media partner. We did a live stream for 2 days straight. So that was pretty awesome. We saw some great new technologies. I got my hands on the Drobo Mini. Yay. So lots of cool stuff coming out of there.
Thank you. And again, that URL, geekbeat.tv. Also, folks, if you want to submit stories to our lineup, if you're like, hey, we want to hear you talk about this or that, go to technewstoday.reddit.com. That's our subreddit where you can let us know what stories you'd like us to talk about each and every day. We include that in our preparation. We look at it to help us decide what stories to cover each day. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or you can phone us and leave us a voice message. Our number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Nilay Patel joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.